Welcome to the Build Up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes. Please bet responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for further information.
Mick, I'm starting this Build Up podcast today, right? In association with Ladbrokes, as always. And I have a strange feeling of relief. Okay. There's a sort of thing of like, we've been talking about getting hyped for these big sporting weekends, and you know, we've got Ireland and, you know, against Switzerland and Georgia a couple of weeks ago. We've got Ireland in the World Cup, obviously. Nearly there's been a World Cup related game, whether it be warm ups or the World Cup, nearly every week since we've been doing this podcast. Finally, I can kind of look forward to a weekend that I can just relax and enjoy the actual sport. You know, there were some good, decent quarterfinals last weekend in the Rugby World Cup, but they're all soured by the fact that we had the Ireland-New Zealand game. This weekend, we've got two big semi-finals coming up. We're going to be talking with Stephen Ferris later on in the show about them. We can just look forward to them with a bit of joy. The same, we'll be chatting to Kevin Doyle about the football. We don't have to talk about Ireland and either worrying about the game coming up or talking about why were Ireland so bad last weekend. So we can actually sit back and look forward to, I suppose you're inevitably going to be very annoyed when Man City beat Aston Villa. But aside from that, it's just a good weekend.
You know what? Actually, you're 100%, like, Villa are away to Man City this weekend. I don't expect anything. I'll watch the match and I'll want them to win now, but it's not going to define my weekend if they lose 3-0. They've done their job. They got 7 points in the last nine, from the last three games. They're flying it. They've got Liverpool and Man City. It's almost like I can take a couple of weeks off from the Villa as well, you know? So it's like, yeah, there's really good sport on. Liverpool are playing Spurs. We've got lots of GEA on across that we're going to talk about a little bit later on as well.
Like, we're going to get hyped again.
It was the best weekend of the GEA calendar last week, along with maybe this weekend with all other county finals. And you add in about 402 replays this week as well.
I was about to say, how much of an impact do you think us dedicating our Get Hyped segment last week to getting everybody hyped about the GAA weekend influenced how good the matches were at the weekend? Because they were brilliant. There was so much drama, and including some of the games, like, we have Morris coming in again today. All right, he was wrong in some of his predictions, but to be wrong about predicting Micheál Branocks to win the Galway Intermediate replay, and to be wrong in the fashion where Micheál Branocks lose it on a penalty shootout, is if you're going down, let's go down, all goes blazing.
By the way, you've probably, you know, if you're paying 3 or 4 quid in, or whatever it is, 8 quid, into Galway football matches all year, you're probably done all right, because the senior finals, after going to a replay, the intermediate final went to a replay and then went to a penalty shootout in the replay. Yep. So not too bad in Galway football there.
We're going to be getting hyped later on. We'll be chatting about all the other county finals, like we said, that are going on this weekend, and of course the replays as well. We'll also be getting your NFL picks, Mick. You had another good week, 2-1 last week, I think, again.
Another 2-1. I was let down by Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, but I'm happy with 2-1. I'm 10-5 for the season, so against the spread, which isn't bad, even if I do say so.
How are my beloved Buffalo Bills doing?
Buffalo Bills, I suggested last week, do not go against them with the spread against Miami Dolphins, that they're not in that place yet where you can just trust them to go out and beat a team by 20 points. They didn't. They won by 10. They didn't play very well, but they were playing against the Dolphins, so you can't lose. They're 5-1. It's a bit bananas. It's starting to get a little bit serious now. They're going to have to work to not get into the playoffs at this stage, but I'm not a lover of their quarterback, Josh Allen.
Why not?
He's very inaccurate. He does a lot of things well. He's a good runner with the ball and all, but I'm just not, I don't try. Look, we'll talk about it later on.
Grant, we also have our big shout coming up later on, where it's your chance to win 2 cakes and a sports biography. My prediction on, I think it was 5 or 6 games in the Premier League to be both teams to score, was incredible, because I almost had every game in which both teams didn't score. So Mick, you're back in the hot seat this weekend. You're going to be tasked with coming up with a shout that's 25-1 or greater.
I've got a few ideas, Mark. I'll reveal them in time.
Cool, looking forward to them later on in the show. We'll also, of course, have our 1-2 free picks for the football, where we'll be trying to win €100 cash on ladbrokes.com by correctly predicting the score of 3 week this weekend's football games. But speaking of football, let's start off the show by chatting to Kevin Doyle about Liverpool-Tottenham this weekend, and plenty more besides. Kevin, we start with the big game this weekend, Liverpool against Spurs. It's one of those that a month or two ago, you'd be looking at this going, these two teams could be, you know, fighting for the top of the table. Spurs have flattered to deceive over the last month or two. But you were obviously working on the game, the Champions League game, during the week. Have you seen signs of a return to form?
Yeah, they played much better than I thought they would on Tuesday night. They were different from the first whistle. You know, they were attacking in numbers, they looked confident, they were playing not like a team that we saw the last, well, so far this season, where, you know, they don't look full of energy, they look lethargic, they don't look happy with each other. It wasn't the case. Wasn't the case on Tuesday night. Five goals, could have scored more. I think they're just like, there's a lot said about them. I think they got to a Champions League final, massively overachieved getting to that final. And that was their chance to sign a few players in the summer. They didn't do it. Players are probably, you know, if they're overachieving, putting so much effort into last season, it's hard to come back to normality and you know, get going again without fresh faces and a fresh buzz around the place. That was their missed opportunity, I think, to really keep themselves in the top two or three teams in the Premier League, whereas now they're back in the bunch and players coming out of contract at the end of the season, and it seems to be some unhappy faces and rumblings coming out about training a bit too hard and blah, blah, blah. All the stuff that comes out when you aren't playing well, which you never hear about when the team is winning. But they played well on Tuesday night, made a change. Eriksen didn't play, Danny Rose didn't play, two players who have been poor for them lately. I think without them, they seem to gel as a team better. Whatever's going on behind the scenes with those two regarding their contracts or their happiness or unhappiness around the training ground, without them in the team, they seem to be the Spurs that we saw playing so well last season.
I was going to ask you that actually, because there's always talk, we kind of on the outside looking in, when you hear of like Christian Eriksen being disgruntled and wanting to move away and all this, and then we assume, oh yeah, that's having an effect on the rest of the team. Is that actually true? If you're in a club where you're hearing about players wanting away, does it affect the morale of the players around them?
I don't think it does affect the players around him. It's more the player himself, you know. And again, everyone's different. Every player's different. But I don't know. We don't know what went on. The summer of rumours Real Madrid were trying to sign him. If that was the case, that was Spurs, which is like the year after his contract, it surely would have sold him. What's the point in keeping a player? You know they're not going to be too happy if Real Madrid wants to sign you and you don't let them go. So I would imagine Real Madrid maybe sniffed around but didn't make a concrete offer. So Spurs had no decision to make. And he's probably just, you know, upset by all that, and I don't know him. I don't know, you know, we don't really know how he's training or what way he is, but the year left in his contract, so you'd imagine he's here and offers his agent to speak into clubs and he's trying to line up his future and where he might be. So all that will be affecting him personally and his performances, which, you know, have been poor this season, whereas I don't think it'll affect the other players. The only thing with Spurs is there's a few players in that position, and that's not good, I think. When you have one player, fair enough, but two or three, they've let the ball slip there. They're usually so good at having players tied down to long contracts. And that side of things never seems to be an issue with them. And they've, you know, it's just slipped them, whether it's the stadium and the money. And I think they've doubled their budget on that from 400-odd million up to 800 million and massive repayments to make on that. And it's obviously eaten into what they can spend on players and what they can spend on contracts. And it's having an effect on them.
I don't know if you ever kind of experienced that yourself, Kevin, of like, you know, coming off the back of a successful season or a successful run that you feel like you're going to build on. And then it all just kind of, I'd say it's like water going through your hands, really. It can almost be hard to grasp as it's happening, that, you know, that it can be very hard to kind of get back. Like, obviously Tuesday night will help for them. You know, a big, big win before a big game is definitely going to get their heads back in order. But these seasons can slip away from you before you know where you are.
Definitely, yeah. And I think with Spurs as well, like, they did so well, Champions League final. They didn't have much of a break. All their players were in off internationals. And unlike other top teams who get to a Champions League final, they don't have the bigger squads that they can change loads of players and freshen up that easily. They have to rely on the same faces a lot of the time. They had to rely on the same faces all last season. So players are tired, mentally, physically. And then when they don't go and sign players to When you've had a good season or when things are going well and you know you need a competition, you need to add to it all the time. The top teams always do it. They always have two or three players. It keeps the players there on their toes. It freshens up training. It's new faces that haven't heard what the manager has been saying for the last few years. So, you know, they won't be bored of listening to the manager's same message, which a lot of the Spurs have been there for a long time. This is the Pochettino now. Imagine they've heard everything he's had to say. That's why you keep needing to bring in new players and just keep everyone on their toes and the buzz. And Spurs, I can't believe they didn't, you know, what a position they were in, new stadium, Champions League final, and didn't, you know, build on it. And all of a sudden, in the space of 3 or 4 months, gone from such a positive place to a lot of negativity around them. But it happens, yeah. I suppose, I don't know, I haven't seen it at that level. I haven't been at the very top to see what it's like when you're in a Champions League final and that side. But I'd imagine the come down from them being in the Champions League final, not winning it, and then back to pre-season and go, here we go again. We're not going to get to a Champions League final. We haven't signed anyone. We're not going to be able to repeat that. You know, it must be, you know, you see a lot of successful teams when they do really well. It takes them a while to get back to that level. I think it takes 2 or 3 months. Maybe last night we kick-started. It was a really good performance, really good goal. And they could have scored more. Harry Kane looked to be really in real good form. He's scored goals this season. He's been fine. He's the one that kept going, but he hasn't looked like he's been playing as well as he has done in the past. But, you know, on Tuesday night in the Champions League, he was top class.
Yeah, Liverpool though, you know, obviously they've got Champions League as well, but in terms of the league, like, you know, they got the last second winner against Leicester. You know, was it a penalty? You know, whatever, people can dispute that. And then they kind of, like, they don't play very well against United. I suppose everything United did, you know, with the lead and everything like that, but they still got, like, it's kind of, I think they'd be looking at positives about how, like, in over the last two games, they still went out and dug out the result definitely. When they needed to, like, yeah.
I remember having this conversation with them last season where they were winning games and weren't playing well, and, you know, it was a good sign because previous seasons had been playing well and not winning those games where, you know, people were giving out last season about something similar now. They've been playing well this season, just the last two games they haven't hit the world of life, but they're still undefeated in the league. The United game, I'm a Man United fan, and as you know, everyone's saying how well and how organised they were, but they're playing at Old Trafford and defending for most of the game. Like, it was good in relation to where Man United have been this season, but as regards, you know, a top team and at home playing, I wouldn't say it was that fantastic. And Liverpool did well to deal with it, come back and score the equaliser, because, you know, they're away from home against a team who's defending for lots of parts of the game. It doesn't suit Liverpool, to be honest. They like teams coming at them so they can come out and get them on the counter attack. And, you know, they find it harder to break teams down when they're sitting deep and defending like Man United did. They managed to do it, get a point away from home at Old Trafford, still undefeated, top of the league, and sitting pretty.
I want to ask you about goalkeepers, because I was reading what Jürgen Klopp was laughing about, but Adrian obviously, or Alisson back now, and Adrian dropped again. He was talking about the relationship between the two of them and just in football training on a day-to-day basis. He said he had absolutely no clue what they'd be doing, but he likes it. Like, what is it like as an outfield player? We always, like, again, we're talking about cliches. The cliche of, like, you know, that you've goalkeepers, they're a rare breed, they're a bit different, they train separately to everybody else. Is there a different relationship between the keepers and the outfield players and the fact that you're probably not working with them all day, every day?
Keepers are weirdos. Everywhere, every club in that, I'm sorry, but yeah, I played with Marcus Hanneman, who's a USA goalie. He was at Reading with me, and we both moved to Wolves at the same time, and I roomed with him, and oh my God, because we'd moved, and he's a really nice guy, lovely fella, Marcus, because we'd moved to Wolves together, decided we're going to room us together, and it was hilarious, actually, because he was a nut job in a nice way, but the first team goalie and sub goalie, they get on really well. Anywhere I've seen it, in every international or wherever, they seem to have their own little bond, their own little moan at players. They don't like strikers practicing against them. They don't like having to save shots in training. Like, they're just, you're like, why are you a keeper if you don't like saving things? You don't like diving around. Isn't that what it's all about? But they have their own little clique. They're generally a bit different, but, you know, in the main, different in a good way, in fairness to them, and it's a tough job, and especially the sub one, the sub goalies, like, you know, long seasons without ever getting a sniff in a lot of cases, so fair to them. But yeah, no, the dynamic between them is never, you never feel a rivalry between them, you don't feel an awkwardness, whereas you would do sometimes between maybe two strikers, one playing, one not, when you're looking around the dressing room, or, you know, different people competing for positions. I never felt that with goalies, that they had the same rivalry, more of a we're in this together thing, camaraderie, how do you pronounce that? You know, they have each other's back, and it was never, I never saw it where they were moaning that, you know, the sub one should be instead of him, whatever. They never seemed to let it out in public, in the dressing room, whereas you'd hear all the time among other players, among their positions and their rivals for their positions. So But I always seem to have a bit more respect for each other.
What I always get a laugh at is when a keeper pulls off a great save and his immediate reaction is to jump up and start shouting at everybody else.
I know.
Imagine you did that when you score a goal. That just stick in the back of that, just turn around and
play it. I was like, just shut up and save it. It's your job. You should be delighted you're getting something to do. If you didn't have anything to do, we wouldn't get a goalie. So, yeah. They used to annoy me a bit, you know, when you'd want to practice finishing the end of training and they'd just walk in and stuff, and just like, for fuck's sake. But anyway, yeah, another pet peeve for me to get off my chest with you.
Because another person we talked about it after we chatted to you on the podcast actually last week, was it's just Roy Hodgson and Crystal Palace. Like, they're playing Arsenal at the weekend. God knows what Arsenal, what will happen. But Hodgson, like, is he an underrated manager? I know he only worked with him for a short time, but Palace currently, I think they're sixth in the league. They're only a couple of points. They lost to Man City at the weekend, obviously, but you know, that's, you can be forgiven for losing to Man City. But like, he seems to be a bit underrated as a manager, probably because of his time with Liverpool and maybe the way it ended with England. But the man is doing a brilliant job.
Yeah, like, he got Fulham to the US Cup final. Did they win it that year? Did they win it or did they get beat in the final?
I think they lost in the final, yeah. Might possibly to Sevilla. Yeah. Oh, God.
He tried to sign me. He was ringing me all summer, trying to sign me that summer, and I chose Wolves, and then fucking Fulham went and got to the UEFA Cup final. I was talking about, well, that was a good decision, Kevin. But, no, I liked him because he tried to sign me. I think he's a good manager. He is a good manager. He organises teams, I think, very well. I don't think he did that well at Liverpool, maybe because when he is, I don't know, I think he's better organising a team who aren't quite as good to upset bigger teams, to cause them more trouble. But you know, everywhere he's gone over the years, if he does get, you know, with a different club or Liverpool, wherever he gets sacked, he comes and bounces back straight away with another team and does well with them. So he's a really nice man as well, to speak to, lovely fella, really, you know, genuine, interesting man. So he's still going strong. He was probably the oldest manager in the Premier League, I'd imagine. Close enough to it. He's, you know, nothing but good things to say about him from any of my dealings with him over the years. I don't know if he's underrated. I rate him. I think a lot of people would rate him and think he's a good manager, and as you know, anyone who's stuck around for as long as he has and still having good success at it knows what he's on about.
Yeah, it was Atletico Madrid they lost. I picked the wrong perennial winners of the Europa League.
Right
there.
Country, anyway.
exactly. Just on, you know, Mark mentioned Arsenal there. And, like, I mean, we could be going around in circles and we could have the same, you know, we could be having the same conversation every week. But, you know, it was an unbeaten run that ended on Monday night. But I suppose the biggest thing for Arsenal was losing to Sheffield United. It's not a surprise. There's nobody coming into work on Tuesday shocked at what they saw.
Yeah, I know. I was watching it, and Sheffield United have been very good, I know, but Arsenal, that just sort of sums them up, not just this year or last year, over the last good long number of years. What it is that they can't go to a place like this and win, whether it's Sheffield United or Stoke, used to cause them a lot of trouble. You know, and that's why Emery, I know we spoke about it again, but that's why I felt he was going to come in and be the sort of guy who was going to be able to get those results to change that, because he's seen as a, you know, the more pragmatic, defensively minded organiser, tougher coach. Just hasn't worked out so far from what I see. He's been like fine, and I think still giving him time and get some more of his own. He's in there a year now. You know, you'd expect them to have had more of an impact. I thought he would have had more of an impact on them, on their style, on games like that. The time has been there.
I can't believe it. Drives me mad is every time I see, every week Arsenal seem to be in crisis, and then I look at the Premier League table and they're still fifth.
Everybody else is in crisis.
Yeah.
So.
the win the other night, like, and they're winning touching distance of the, you know, of second place, and then they lose, and it's all, I know it's doom and gloom, but it's just the way they've been for so long. They'll be there. They'll be fourth and fifth for the whole season, go on a little run and then lose to the likes of Sheffield United at home or away. Sorry, when they'll win the harder ones, and it's just the way they've been for the last, you know, for as long as you can really think back.
Kevin, before we let you go, we have to get your treble off you this week. Last week you predicted a Liverpool 3-1 win. It didn't come off, but you were the only person, I think, who predicted that United would actually get a goal. This week you're starting off at Burnley against Chelsea.
Yeah, Burnley-Chelsea. I'm going to go for a Chelsea win just about. Burnley's been very good. Another good season for him. It's really hard place to go. I never like going to Turfmore, but I think Chelsea under Frank Lampard have a bit of grit about them. I think they'll sneak a 2-1 win.
Newcastle Wolves then you were looking at as well?
Yeah, Newcastle has just been woeful. Wolves are starting to come reasonably good. I think Wolves will be able to go there and win. The same scoreline as the Chelsea. I'll go 2-1 to Wolves.
Cool. And then the last one, the big game, we've already talked about it, Liverpool and Spurs.
Yeah. Liverpool Spurs. As good as Spurs said in the Champions League for the week, I think Liverpool will home be too strong for them. I'll go for a Liverpool 3-1 win.
Right, okay. Well, if we just go by the results on that, looks like it's almost 6-1, a 5.69-1 treble, which is pretty good. If you want to go with the scores and you really, really trust Kevin, 712-1.
There you go.
Or you can go individually.
Anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a bad evening's work, yeah.
Well, thanks very much, Kevin, and we look forward to chatting right, next week after all that comes in.
No worries, I'll talk to you soon.
Great stuff there from Kevin. His the games he actually picked out there in his treble are also the 1-2 free games on ladbrokes.com this week. Mm-hmm. If you haven't heard of 1-2 free before, it's your chance to win €100 cash by correctly predicting the score in three of the weekend's games. This weekend, they happen to be Burnley against Chelsea, Newcastle against Wolves, and Liverpool against Tottenham. You can play it for absolutely free. If you get one of the scores right, you win a €1 free bet. If you get two scores right, you win a €5 free bet. And if you get all three, you win €100 cash. Mick, we got Kevin's scoreline predictions for those games. What are yours?
Well, I got my €1 free bet last week. Don't forget, I got City to beat Palace 2-0. Said it on the video, said it on the podcast, everything. So, and that was my game on the video, so I feel pretty good about it. Fortunately, it didn't back itself up. I just want to, the joy and the stress and the... So even though it's a free game, but you want to win that €100. You want, and also it's the kudos of winning it. Much like our big shout here, as much as I would love two cakes and it's a sports biography, I want the bragging rights. Yeah, so get that 2-0. I hadn't ever won on the Saturday game before. I don't think I'd ever picked the Saturday game right before. It's a completely different experience because you go to bed on Saturday night thinking, oh God, Rangers are definitely going to beat Hearts 3-0, and then I just need Liverpool to do the job. And you think you've got the €100 in the bag almost. I had Rangers to beat Hearts 3-0. Hearts scored after 8 minutes. It was gone. All of that stress and hope and everything for nothing.
I think none of us not one of us in the office had Hearts scoring against Rangers. So nope. We were all goosed after that. This week, Burnley against Chelsea. What are you going with?
Not too far off, Kevin, actually. Burnley are a decent team. Jesus, watching them that they were robbed against Leicester. Absolutely robbed. Chris Wood is causing absolute chaos. You can see Chelsea conceding. I'm going to go 1-1 on this one. Do you know that? I think Burnley are going to get a result.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know. I'm caught with this game because Chelsea have suddenly become good. And like...
They're all right. Like, they only beat Newcastle 1-0. That was a good game, actually. Newcastle have improved a little bit, but...
Yeah, but the 4-1 away win to Southampton before that. 2-0 win at home to Brighton. Brighton are actually looking decent. It was one of these things where Frank Lampard, and they were so much in the media at the start of the season, and everybody was praising them when they were actually losing games, and now they're winning them and they've kind of quietly
They've got Abraham, Hudson-Odoi, I'm missing someone there, but they've all these
Mason Mount,
of course, he's the one I'm looking for. These kids coming through, and they're all decent. It's like you expect one of them to kind of not be good enough.
I'm going to go 1-0 Chelsea.
1-0 Chelsea, yeah. Okay, at Turfmore.
Yeah. And then Wolves against Newcastle, Europa League this week.
Sunday, 2 o'clock.
Newcastle aren't bad, and they're at home. I'm going to say they aren't bad. They're probably going to get relegated, but they're not as bad and as hopeless as we predicted.
Steve Bruce has actually done what Steve Bruce does. He's made them organise hard to beat. Kieran Clark's back in that team as well.
Yeah,
played well against Chelsea, actually. Yeah,
I'm going to go 1-1.
I'm going to go 1-0 to Wolves. I think Wolves have just turned the corner a little bit and they need to win these games, so I think they will. But you're going 1-1. I'm going 1-0. Low scoring games today. We've got 2-1-alls, 2-1-0s.
Well, as we talk about in the big shout, I'm bitten by the old both teams to score punt I had last week, so now I've gone the opposite. No one's going to score. Liverpool against Tottenham, the big game of the weekend, Mick. What did Kevin go with it? He went 3-1
to Liverpool. I'm not too far off that, to be honest. I think Liverpool are going to get back on track a little bit here. And Spurs, I think we're waiting. I think we're seeing this as a bigger game than it actually is. I think that Spurs are probably just that level below now. I think Liverpool, I can't see Liverpool not winning at Anfield. I'll go 2-0 instead of 3-1 though. I don't know. Is Salah going to be back? He is. That was a big difference without him there at the weekend. Yeah. I think he will be though.
Yeah. I'm going to go 2-1. I was thinking 2-0, but then I can just see someone like Liverpool play such a high line, and I can see Son or Kane getting some sort of joy, even more coming off the bench with this pace. I think we're going to go 2-1, but probably 2-0 Liverpool and Tottenham to get a consolation goal late on.
That's 1-2-3.
Yeah, that's 1-2-3. For your chance to play yourself, just get on to ladbrokes.com right now, create your account, sign in, and you can play for absolutely free.
We didn't talk about Man United and Norwich with Kevin or here. It's like Man United Norwich for me is just the quintessential game from the 90s. Colour clash of the red, white and black with the yellow and green, the good teams back in the Jeremy Goss era and the early Man United Premier League titles. It's just a wonderful looking match. Unfortunately, it's a battle of minnows these days. But the one takeaway I'd have from the United-Liverpool match from a United point of view was while they did a lot of things right and they looked very organised and so on and so forth, and Kevin was like, yeah, they're playing at Old Trafford, it's the least you expect. He's right. That's exactly what you think. If I was a United fan, I'd be happy on the day, and in the cold light of day this week, I'd be looking back at it going, we played like we were Norwich or Southampton getting a surprise lead over Liverpool or Man City. It's like they were in a different league. So as soon as they went 1-0 up, it was, you know, all hands on deck, you know, fighting back, getting organised, making sure there's no way to break you down as Liverpool just peppered them. A Liverpool playing team who wasn't playing that well, and you're like, this is United at Old Trafford. And that's almost the saddest thing of them all. Like, it's great to get the result. Brilliant. You stop Liverpool's winning run. Fair play to you. But you were almost exposed in that Liverpool are just in a completely different league at this moment in time.
And the worrying thing, like, the thing, and this is going to, like all my conversations around football, it's going to come back down to fantasy football in the end. Like, against Norwich, it's such a hard game to call because Norwich have been on a bad run. But at the same point, they're at home. They are dangerous, obviously, going forward. Like, it's hard to see. You couldn't, with real confidence, predict that United are going to win this game easily.
No, I don't. I wouldn't have any confidence whatsoever. No, never mind real confidence. It's not like I'd fancy Norwich to do something, to get a point at least.
Yeah, but like Norwich have lost three in the bounce. They won the Man City game, obviously, but they've lost, you know, in between that, they lost to West Ham, they lost to Chelsea, then they lost three after that.
And they drew at Bournemouth at the weekend, though.
Yeah, that's the only thing that are coming back into. But like the other...
they needed the international break. They had a lot of injuries and niggles and everything like that, and they were on their kind of last legs by the time they played Villa. But I think now they could be kind of back again.
And that brings me on to fantasy football, because I've got Timo Pukki, as most people do, and I've got Todd Cantwell, who, by the way, his name should not be Todd. No Premier League player's name should be Todd. He's Tony Cantwell, or he's Tim Cantwell, or he's Tom Cantwell. Todd, I just can't get you.
Yeah. I'd go with Thomas even.
Can't get around just calling someone Todd Cantwell. But anyway, have him as well. Is it time to offload them? A couple of people did ship them off last week and obviously benefited from it. But like, I could see Pukki then going up and getting a goal against United.
Did you watch Match of the Day? Like, just watching the Norwich Bournemouth game. It was on last. He had two good chances in that game. That one of them was a very good save. Yeah. You know, you're thinking, and they had a conversation about him afterwards about, like, you know, keep taking your chances, the goals to come. But, like, you know, it's cliche. But actually, if you take Alan Shearer talking about that for real, he knows whether a striker has gone off the boil or was lucky earlier in the season, or whether he's just going through a form where a spell where nothing's gone in for him. And I would actually trust Shearer on that, to be honest. So I'm going to stick with Pukki for another while.
Yeah.
But you don't take fancy advice off me. I had the Sheffield United goalkeeper and one of their defenders, Lundstrom, I think, Monday night. So I haven't checked what I've got, what I ended up with. They both did okay, obviously. But going into Monday night, I had 15 points, Mark.
Yeah, Lundstrom, I had 14 points coming into Monday night. You ended up on 35 because you got Lundstrom is just, he's the only reliable player in fantasy football anymore. Playing in midfield, down as a defender, with a Sheffield United defence that's as tight could be. Like, you have to raise your cap to them. I don't know. Like, fantasy football is in crisis mode at the minute, I think. You're looking at the average scores for each team. I talked about this on the football podcast earlier on in the week. I just don't know where to look anymore. And I have to get rid of Adrian. Obviously, he's been dropped. Salah, do you get rid of him and bring in Mane? I think you kind of nearly
I
do
already have to Mane.
Get rid of Pookie. I had Youri Tielemans, and from the start of the season, he did nothing. I sold him in Madison, and now Tielemans keeps
scoring.
But
sure, Mark, let's face it. You only play fancy football so you can give out about all the decisions you didn't make and all the bad timing that you had. It's the only reason
to
you
win.
Play it.
It's just every week being reminded of my old failures.
You want to win, but at the same time, this podcast is probably a good place for you to come and talk about fantasy, because the last thing we ever do is win.
Yep. Any prediction, fantasy is kind of the same thing. I'm trying to predict stuff that's going to happen at the weekend. So I predicted that I'm going to sell Pookie and he'll score a hat trick. So look up the odds on that on ladbrokes.com, because that could be one to get behind. But anyway, if you are having any bets on this weekend's football, be sure to gamble responsibly and visit dunlewy.net for more information. Let's chat to Stephen Ferris about the Rugby World Cup. Stephen, I don't think any of us have the heart to get into the Ireland and New Zealand game again and breaking down where it all went wrong with. It's been talked to death at this stage. But looking forward to the future, like, where do we go from here? I suppose Andy Farrell has a big job on his hands. What do you think is the first protocol? What's the biggest task that he has to do to get Ireland ready for, one, the Six Nations, but also developing for the next World Cup in 4 years' time?
Yeah, well, I think what's going to be priority for Andy Farrell in the short term is probably to try and do well in the Six Nations. So at least for the first year, in my opinion, he's going to hold on to the likes of Johnny Sexton, the likes of Kian Healy, Peter Amani. Will somebody like Keith Earls hang around? Maybe. I'm not sure that Rob Carney will make Andy Farrell's cut for next year. But yeah, kind of. He needs four or five lads to build the squad around, but I definitely think he's going to hold on to some of the lads like Sexton and Kian Healy and a few other boys just to keep himself right getting into the Six Nations. But it's a difficult one for Andy Farrell, because I feel personally that, you know, Joe Smith has been, yeah, obviously he's a fantastic coach, but he kind of does what the RFU tells him to as well, or has told him to in the past. And, you know, is Andy Farrell going to not select guys who are on national contracts? You know, is somebody like Peter Omani, who, you know, in 4 years' time, will he be at the peak of his physical power to put in an unbelievable performance, or a few, five performances in a row for Ireland to reach a World Cup semi-final? Probably not. So, you know, is he going to select younger guys who aren't on national contracts, who aren't earning the big bucks, or will the RFU dictate, you know, who they would like in that squad? Because you look at everybody in an RFU contract, and it doesn't really matter, you know, how they're playing and, you know, what their performances have been like or what their form's like. You know, they're generally getting selected. So it'll be interesting to see what Andy Farrell does, and if he puts his foot down and selects more on form and selects more on ability of the here and now, instead of, you know, maybe going a little bit more on reputation, experience, and you know, if they're tied to the RFU or not.
If you look at the World Cup then, like, you know, we talked a little bit about Larmour last week, and, you know, like, it's not as if Rob Carney has ever let Ireland down, or and he's the wrong person to be picking out, because he didn't have a particularly bad game by the standards of everybody else. But, you know, is this, how come we're, as a rugby culture almost, oh, never the ones that will try something. So Joey Carberry can't play at 15 because he doesn't play there for his club, but it's okay for Beauden Barrett to pop into the best team in the world and play at fullback even though he doesn't play there for his club. You know, how come, what is it, and you've been involved in Irish rugby your whole life, what is it about our culture that we never go for that kind of, that, you know, that little bit of an off-centre idea or selection or phase, style of play or whatever it is, that we're almost just incredibly conservative in how we do and select everything?
Yeah, it's a tough one to answer, and I don't think that I have the exact right answer for you, to be honest. I know I mentioned it the last week there in RTE that I feel that the guys get into a World Cup, and it doesn't matter if it's Kian Healy, or it doesn't matter if it's Rob Carney, 1 to 15 or 1 to 31 in the case of the whole rugby squad for the World Cup. I don't feel that they play enough rugby in the lead up to it. I think that lads aren't match hardened when they're going into having to play 5, 4, 5, 6, 7 games in a row to win a Rugby World Cup. And I know I've said it loads of times, but like Johnny Sexton's played 280 minutes in 2019. You know, who's going to say that Johnny Sexton's going to play 380 minutes in a row to win a Rugby World Cup final? The likelihood of that is probably zero to none. And I feel that like in India World Cup, yes, there are a few resting player protocol, you know, three games on, usually one game off. And in those three games, there might only be 180 minutes in those three games. The other two are ones off the bench and then ones like whipped off after 50 minutes. And again, that's pointing to the guys here on a few contracts. So you look at the likes of Owen Farrell, played double the amount of match minutes as Johnny Sexton this season. I look at the likes of Billy Vinopolo, more than double the match minutes of like the likes of Peter O'Mahony. And, you know, I think that filters down throughout the team. And I'm all for the resting protocol, but I think in the build-up to a World Cup, these guys need to be put into these bigger games more often. They need to play more rugby and they need to become more durable in the lead-up to the Rugby World Cup, because I think it showed that England seemed to be getting better as the tournament went on and Ireland seemed to be getting worse as the tournament's on. And even lads like the four-out half for Ireland, Jack Cardy, Johnny Sexton, Byrne, and who's Carberry, the other one?
Carberry.
Like, the four Irish out-halves are the bottom four international out-halves in world rugby for minutes played this season. So, like, it's for me, where Owen Farrell and Beauden Barr are the two best, are the two highest. Wow. And, you know, look at the way they're performing and look at the way that they're controlling games and dictating games and everything else. And I just think that's something that needs to be looked at going forward. And I think it's really good, this whole resting protocol, and it develops players in the club game for Ulster, Leinster, Munster, Connacht. I think that's brilliant. But in the lead up, as I keep saying here, to a Rugby World Cup where you need to be able to play 5, 6 games on the bounce, you know, that whole year leading up to it needs to be reviewed. And Andy Farrell hopefully will have a part to play in that, and see what they can come up with for the next one, because there's going to be more pressure in 2023.
Do you think we're actually nearly focused too much on the World Cup? I think Joe Smith actually kind of mentioned this as well, in terms of that for that year leading up to it, all we're thinking about is the World Cup. There's also an aspect there when you mentioned the players. Sometimes as well, it seems to be like that they're kind of, you're minding them obviously for the World Cup. You've got all that in mind, and it's not maybe then going to take into account form or whatever it is going into it, especially when they're not playing that often. When you compare that to the likes of New Zealand starting lads at the weekend that having that many caps, we've seen that through other countries. We were even, myself and Mick were chatting earlier on about Wales and the beat us in 2011, and you had the likes of George North Priestland coming in who hadn't too much experience before the World that year, maybe a year's experience, maybe a year and a half.
Yeah.
But that thing that, like, you don't really expect that with Ireland an awful lot. You know, it's that thing, I suppose, again, they've been afraid to take the risk and maybe too planned out and too focused on the World Cup too far in advance.
I probably disagree with you, Mark. I think every team in the competition is focusing on the Rugby World Cup a year, 18 months before it actually kicks off. You know, New Zealand, they live and breathe it in New Zealand. You know, it doesn't matter if it's club game or international. They're on their backs. They expect their team to win the Rugby World Cup. Like, that's pressure. And they're going out and they're delivering. They've delivered for the last two World Cups, and it wouldn't surprise me if they delivered again. That's 12 straight years that they will have delivered if they can pull it off. And I think Ireland, you know, Joe said, oh, maybe we focused too much over the last year. And, you know, when it actually came around, we were maybe overthinking it and everything else. I don't think you can overthink a Rugby World Cup. I think you can get ahead of yourself at times, but at the end of the day, like, you know, they've been preparing for this. They've been in pre-season camp. You know, they're in pre-season camp for one thing. That's to win a Rugby World Cup. So, like, if there's anybody that's overdoing it or making the players feel that it's got on top of them, it's probably Joe, by putting on all that pressure, by giving, you know, overload of information, by, you know, just World Cup info constantly coming at them. And Maybe that's something that he's learned after this. But to be honest, I thought there were, I know I've talked to you guys before about this. I thought there would have been a lot of lessons learned from 2015. But at the same time, you know, we played Argentina in 2015. We played New Zealand in 2019, and there's you know, a massive gulf in class between those two sides at the minute. So, yeah, part of me, I know you've heard me say it, that the players just didn't perform on the day, and they've got to take a lot of the flack and a lot of the criticism, just like I had to do it to 2011, take it on the chin and move on and try and use it to your advantage. But, you know, I think it's just a shared responsibility, and there's no pointing the finger at one individual and saying, you know, they got it wrong. I think as a collective, it just hasn't worked out. And there'll be a massive review, there'll be a massive debrief and, you know, investigation into what the players ate before they friggin' took the pitch. And, you know, but it is true. Like, they will, you know, they will do a massive debrief, from asking every single player that was on that trip what they thought about it, to asking the coaches, to asking nutritionists, to asking S&C guys, and maybe even some fans of what they thought. So, yeah, there's so much. I know that's a pretty long-winded answer, but there's so much to think about over the next couple of years to try and get it right. But, yeah, it just feels like professional rugby comes around in circles, guys. You know, you've been following the game long enough, and it just feels like Ireland are on a slightly downward curve at the minute. And the reason for that is just a disappointing World Cup.
Yeah, we'll look ahead to what's left of this World Cup in a couple of minutes. But last thing I wanted to ask you anyway, Stephen, is, you know, you come home from 2011 World Cup, you know, what happened against Wales. And what I find very hard to understand from a player's point of view is two things. One is that every other competition like this, you know, that's the pinnacle of the game, it's at the end of your season. You probably go on holidays for a while. I know the lads will have a bit of a break now, but in reality, it's just the start of their season. And they all have to go back for their clubs. Yeah. And they've got Champions Cup coming up. And then they're going to be back in Carton House, or I think they've changed it, wherever they are, back in Ireland camp at Christmas, which isn't that far away, you know. And
yeah,
one, what's that like going back, kind of like, you know, with the disappointment hanging over you and the height of your career, and then going back to kind of just like, you know, that lower level again or whatever. And then what's it like when, to be honest, I'd imagine there's a lot of kind of resentment, might be the wrong word, but just sick of it all, you know, that you've gone through everything you could, it hasn't worked out the way you wanted, and you're just fed up. And the last thing you probably want to do is meet all the guys again at Christmas, you know, in for a big camp.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I know everybody didn't come home in the plane from Japan, and I probably would have been one of those lads. 2011, I stopped off in Dubai with a couple of the boys and just let off a bit of steam and just got my head away from it. But, yeah, like, some lads like to get straight back on the horse. You know, they'll be wanting to come back, maybe take a week, 10 days off, again, depending on how much rugby they've actually played during that World Cup, and get stuck back into it. European Cup rugby's just around the corner once again. You know, it's coming thick and fast. And yeah, for me, like, I just like to get my head away from it, and, you know, forget about what had happened in that quarter final. But I think one of the big things, lads, is in 2011, like, we played okay against USA. We played fantastic against Australia. We completely obliterated Russia. And we played very, very well and very street smart against Italy. It just felt like the whole way through the group, Ireland had one good game the whole of the World Cup, or, you know, against Scotland. And it just felt like there was nothing going to come. Like, and I think that the expectation leading into that World Cup quarterfinal in 2011 was so, so high. You know, it was so much higher, and yet we didn't get a hammering or a tonguing, as Eddie O'Sullivan said. But, you know, we did let ourselves down on that day, but at least we fired a few shots, and you know, we had opportunities in that game to get ahead, and we didn't take them. But it wasn't in the same manner as the way the lads were in this World Cup. You know, apart from you take out that Scotland game, you know, flipping it, you know, it wasn't a particularly great viewing from an Irish fan's point of view of the rest of the matches, and it never really felt like they were gonna take that next step, and you know, there was gonna be a brilliant performance come out of somewhere. But yeah, I think some lads will just want to switch off now and, you know, turn off their phones and not listen to podcasts and not listen to journalism and the papers. But at the same time, some lads might want to get straight back at it and put a few of that negative criticism to bed maybe. But yeah, I think everybody's just disappointed, and that's the overriding feeling.
It's interesting. We did a poll on the site during the week about who the next Irish captain should be, and there's probably two trains of thought. And the one that won out on our site anyway from the people who read Balls is that they were looking at the likes of a James Ryan rather than maybe Johnny Sexton, looking with, again, with an eye to the future, maybe an eye to a bit further than just the next year or two. Who would you be tipping for the next Irish captaincy? Who would you like to see get it?
Well, the next Irish captain needs to play pretty regularly. And James Ryan certainly does that. You know, he's an 80-minute man. He's a guy who, thankfully, in his early career, hasn't had too many injury woes. He's kept in the Ireland under-20s. I remember watching him in the final. And, yeah, I think he's got all the credentials to step up to the plate. Is it maybe a year or two too early? Maybe he needs to hang around somebody like Peter Omani for the next couple of years and get more of a feeling of how it works at the top international level. Or do you say, this guy's good enough, this guy's got the leadership qualities that we want to take Ireland through to another World Cup in 2023? Me personally, I don't think Johnny Sexton would be the candidate. I think he's coming to the end of his career. He's going to play less and less rugby, if anything. He's not going to play more and more. And, you know, I think he's a good man to have about the Irish squad for the next year or two, for the younger guys to learn off him. But yeah, for me, I'd be putting James Ryan forward if he feels he is capable of it. There's no point in giving somebody the captain's armband if they're not 100% backing the idea themselves. But for some reason, I think he's got a bit about him, and I could maybe lead this Irish team to a bit more glory in the future. And, you know, somebody else, maybe like Peter Romani. But again, in 4 years' time, is he going to be the man to lead Ireland in the other World Cup? I don't think he is. So, yeah, I would probably agree with most of the people in the poll that voted and go with James Ryan.
There we go. A nice positive note to leave Ireland. We haven't said that too many times over the last few months. This weekend is, you know, it's hard for us to get our head around it a little bit, but it's actually an amazing couple of games. Really, really intriguing battles, I would say. Just looking at the odds on Ladbrokes here, England are 9-4, New Zealand 4-11, and England with a 7-point handicap. So England are +7. And in the other game, then you've got Wales 11-4, South Africa 3-10, with Wales +8 on the handicap. Are we looking at another all Southern Hemisphere final to end the tournament the way we started it?
I wouldn't be betting against it. I think before the tournament started, I fancied New Zealand and South Africa to meet each other again in the final.
You did. It's on record on the show. You said that, yeah.
It's on record. I just think, you know, Wales, if they had a fully fit team and a fully loaded team with the likes of Anscombe in there, you know, Jonathan Davies in there, Navidi fully fit. He's obviously gone home. John Davies might not be 100% fit. There's a couple other guys that look like they're glued together. So I really fancy South Africa to beat that handicap. I think that they're going to win by more than 8 points. I just think Wales last week didn't show me anything to say that they're going to get up for this. Going to get up for this semi-final. They look really deflated, and, you know, really got out of jail against France. I thought France weren't particularly good in that second half. Shot themselves in the foot with the red card, obviously, and were pretty disappointing in the way they tried to clear their lines off that scrum in that final moment when Ross Moriarty got over for the try. So I really fancy South Africa to get the job done. And they seem like a fit bunch of lads who, you know, are playing having a 6-2 spread on the bench, bringing on loads and loads of power and physicality, and especially when this Welsh outfit are getting tired and sluggish and really lacking that energy that I keep talking about. I think South Africa will suffocate them in the end. The England match, I think, is slightly different. I think England's attacking ability, the way they go out the back and have runners from deep, they will cause problems. It's just whether or not they can do it against the best team in the world, and if they can get the same amount of possession as Ireland did against them. Like, Ireland had 50% possession against New Zealand, and hardly even fire a shot. You know, it shows you the amount of mistakes that they actually made. Amazing. So if England can get 50% possession, plus they have a really good bench to bring on, the likes of Joe Marler to come on, you know, the back rowers as well, who, you know, England really play with five back rowers, with Atoji, Laws, McCurry, Underhill, and Billy Vunipolo. Like, it's five guys who carry ball, who are good over the ball, they're physical, and, you know, really put in a shift for them. They definitely have the capability to cause an upset. Do I think they will cause an upset? No. But I think that 7-point margin is you know, it's pretty tight. I think it might come down to a couple of points in that.
Okay, great, interesting. So we go with England with the handicap and South Africa with the handicap, but you're sticking with your pre-tournament prediction of a New Zealand-South Africa final.
Yeah, no, I think I just cannot see Wales pulling out a ridiculous performance to beat South Africa, because that's what it's going to take. And if South Africa turn up with a mindset that they're just going to steamroll them and they're going to get through to a final, then, you know, they might put in a similar performance to Wales did against France in the quarterfinal. But I just think Razzy Erasmus will have these boys cooking, and they'll do a job on Wales, where the other one is a lot tighter to call. And you know what? It wouldn't surprise me if England threw up a huge, huge upset and put them out. But as I say, lads, I'm sticking to my guns and I'm going for a sneaky New Zealand win.
Good stuff, Stephen. Thanks. We should hopefully be able to enjoy the weekend now as neutrals with no pressure on us trying to hope Ireland do something.
No pressure.
Exactly. Thank you, Stephen.
No worries. Cheers, lads. Speak to you soon.
John Mark, I'm sick of talking about Ireland. It's Stevie was brilliant. He's really fascinating. And I mean, we talked about it on the show and we'll be talking to Brent Pope, you know, tomorrow. And like, all of those conversations are really fascinating and really good. But I just find myself reliving it. It's like post-traumatic stress disorder every time I have to go through it.
It's exactly what I was thinking, exactly what Stephen was on about there, which is like in 2011, like 27 was a disaster, but it was a disaster. It was like, Jesus, what's going on here? 2011, you had the probably my favorite Irish rugby game still nearly of all time, the Ireland Australia game.
We topped the group for the first time.
Stephen played a massive role in that game. All right, there was the disappointment, then come the quarter final against Wales, but it was a good game as well. We just, you know, didn't get over the line. Then again, you fast forward to 2015, you had Ireland against France, the team falling apart around them, the tears of Ian Madigan, what a win. And again, to go out against Argentina and lose that game was a massive disappointment, but you did something.
We built up both times to those quarterfinals, which ultimately deflated us, but at least it was a build-up.
Whereas this was just a real grey tournament. It was neither a complete disaster, well, it probably was, but you know, it wasn't like, we weren't going out struggling to beat Namibia.
It wasn't as bad as 07.
But we just, there was nothing. And that game, the game against you perfectly summed it up, because you had the build up to it, which was the Haka and the Fields of Athenry, and you're like, goosebumps, this is incredible. And then just nothing.
Just nothing, exactly, yeah. And look, it's interesting actually, even just looking to this weekend and like leaving Ireland behind us finally, and talking about like, you know, Stevie's bets there and stuff like that, is like, there's a part of me that thinks, hold on a second, we're underrating New Zealand because of how shit Ireland were. But then I'm thinking, well, actually, they could have done whatever they wanted in that game. It doesn't really tell you how they're going to play if England are showing up. Like, England were way better than Australia. Like, I picked Australia in a kind of a cheeky accumulator last week that the rest of it came off except that. But, like, England were brilliant. You know, you have to be honest and say, like, they're going to be a completely different prospect. And the funny thing is then you're thinking, Jesus, our New Zealand, that was a warm-up for New Zealand.
Yeah.
And that's a sad situation for us to be in, where we're basically, do you remember we talked last week, is like, if everything had gone to plan in the group and New Zealand were playing Scotland, they wouldn't even be considering the game. They'd just be thinking, right, this is a good way to get us pumped up for the England match. That's what Ireland ended up being.
Yeah.
And that's grim.
It is. Well, look, I love how we started receiving, we're not going to get into all this about how bad Ireland have been.
Sorry. It does kind of come back around, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Somehow.
But these games this weekend, they are, I think England have every chance against New Zealand. I think it's like, New Zealand might pull away in the end, but it is teed up to be a brilliant game. South Africa and Wales, it depends. Like, South Africa struggled for a long period against Japan, you know, the first half was an incredible first half of rugby to be only 5-3 at half time.
Yeah.
Both of those games on Ladbrokes, they also have a price boost. So if you're having a flutter of the weekend, you'll get price boost odds on both the games. And of course, if you are having a bet, be sure to gamble responsibly and visit dunlewy.net.
I want to ask you one more thing. Is there any part of you, as an Irish sports fan, that wants England to win this weekend?
No.
No, me neither. I was trying to convince myself that that's the way you should be, because New Zealand are two-time defending champions and it's somebody knocking them off their perch and it's a breakthrough and so on and so forth. But there's just no part of me that wants England to ever win. And I think that's a healthy thing, by the way. I don't think it's anti-English or anything like that.
I don't even know if it's England. There's an Eddie Jones
bit. There isn't any chance. Do you see New Zealand have been spying on them this week, apparently? And he called all the New Zealand media fans with typewriters.
There's part of me that, like, if Eddie Jones was our head coach, I'd say I'd absolutely love him. But there's another part of me that wants to see him get beaten more specifically than England.
I have to say, I'm for New Zealand as well. Like, in 2003, when England won the World Cup, right, that team absolutely deserved to win it, and they did everything right. They won the Southern Hemisphere, whatever, won the Grand Slam finally when they did. They'd been on a journey. When they won the World Cup and lifted it, I was happy for them. I thought fair play to them. But while the match was on, I was cheering on Australia like a mad lunatic. I just think it's part of sport, isn't it? Is that our biggest neighbours should always be our enemies in some way, you know?
Yeah. South Africa and Wales, I don't know. I've no. It's going to be a good game, but as in terms of who I want to win as a neutral, I'd rather both of them be. To be honest, yeah. Like, I'd like New Zealand. You know, I'm not going to cheer on England, but I'd much rather England win an incredible game than New Zealand hockey England by 40 points and turning it off.
Which
is what you'd be doing if you weren't an Ireland fan last week. I imagine a lot of Ireland fans.
Yeah, I wonder what the ratings were for that match around the world. Yeah.
But anyway, Mick, it is time to move on with the show, and it's time for you to put together your big shout. Let's see if you can win yourself two cakes in a sports biography.
All right, hold it. Just hold it, Alan.
Push him out.
Steady, David, don't. Get round. No, don't. Bloody.
Before we move on to next week's, actually, just want to look back at last week. So last week, obviously, I was in charge of doing it. I had, I think, 5 games in the Premier League with both teams to score, and then I had a no in the both teams to score market for Liverpool and United. I got it all horribly wrong. I think only 3 of the games, it was 2 or 3 of the games both teams scored.
Three,
and obviously,
I think, yeah.
Both teams did score in Liverpool and United. But we got a good few in last week as well from fans and listeners to the show.
Somebody's going to win it soon.
Yeah,
Mark.
If you want to send in your big shout, make sure it's over 25-1 and email thegaffer@balls.ie. You could win yourself 2 cakes and a sports biography. Paul Doyle tried to do it last week and it went horribly wrong for him. He had Liverpool to win.
Yeah.
No, didn't
that
happen.
Didn't work out.
He had Wolves to win.
No,
didn't happen.
Win.
He had Chelsea to be winning after 30 minutes against Newcastle.
Good idea. Didn't happen, though.
Did not happen. He had the Houston Texans to win against the Colts.
Ooh, Colts won that one.
Yep. And he had Borja Baston to score any time for Swansea City. Didn't even start. Just came off the bench.
And didn't score, I presume.
Didn't score.
Oh, Paul.
That's none out of 5.
He can do better, though. He can get...
Paul's been close a couple of times.
Yeah, Paul's a regular. We've had a good few, though. I was looking through one of them. I know one person probably had a little bit too much faith in Ireland and I think had New Zealand with a 1-5 winning margin, but had everything else right with some GA picks. That's what we like to see. And that's kind of what, not too far off what I've gone with this week, which is, Mark, you talked at the start of the week about how no Irish soccer internationals, no Irish rugby internationals this weekend, but a sporting weekend that we can kind of sit back and enjoy a little bit. Well, I want to stay on top of that sporting weekend. I want to have an interest in everywhere, a finger in every pie, if you will, although that sounds a little bit disgusting and probably unhygienic. But I've decided to go with a 6-fold accumulator crossing 6 different sports.
Now, I like it.
There's a lot more to look forward to this weekend, I'm just saying, because we're going to talk about the NBA in a while. That's back. But I can't really pick any bets because there's games between now and then. So we're going to stay away from that, but we're going to get hyped about it later on as well. You've got the World Series, which is starting. But again, we don't really know what's going to happen between now and the weekend. So I want to stay away from that. But that's something that's worth looking at. And the NFL, obviously, I'm doing some picks about that. So if you take America out of the world, that's like a big weekend in America. But also in the rest of the world, I've gone for 6 different sports with 6 different picks, and let's see what you, because I'm pretty convinced I'm going to win 2 cakes in sports biography here, right? Okay,
let's go.
So we're going to start in the Premier League,
yeah,
the former Barclays Premier League, with what I think is going to be a draw between the Hornets of Watford and the red cherries or just the cherries of Bournemouth. I can't remember. And they are going to draw this match, and that's remarkably 5-2 on from the good eggs at Ladbrokes. And I'm very confident that this game is going to be a
Watford
draw.
Watford are drawing every game they ever played.
It feels like it. They're bottom of the league, but they're good to get a draw. They're at home.
They've drawn four, one, lost none. Sorry. Won none, drawn four, lost five so far this season.
And they've had some pretty tough games in there as well. So I fancy them to get a draw. They've drawn against Arsenal. They've drawn against Tottenham. And I think they're going to draw against Bournemouth. Bournemouth are no strangers to a draw themselves. Drew last week against Norwich.
I fancy teams to score on that one, finish nil all.
Well, I was actually saying I fancy a bit of a nil all in this one, but I'll take one all, I'll take two all. Once it's a draw, that's 5-2. That gets us going for everything else, right? Then let's turn to the world of GAA and to particular to the world of Gaelic football. There's a lot to choose from here. I decided with the hurling and the football to stick to stay safe, okay? Because I want these two cakes in sports biography. The safest bet I see that's a little bit better odds than some, so I could have gone for East Kerry, and there's a few others there. The safest bet I see is Dr. Crokes to once again get into a Kerry senior final. They're playing South Kerry. They're 1-4. Throw them into the accumulator. In Kilkenny, very similar story, I think, really. Ballyhale Shamrocks, the, you know, you All-Ireland champions.
Yeah.
You would fancy them to go and do it again. They're still playing very, very well. They've got TJ Reid on the team, and that's before you add in other people like the likes of Colin Fennelly and whoever else. You know, they're playing James Stevens in the Kilkenny final. That's never easy. They're 2-7 though, and I predict that they're going to win it. Moving to rugby then. This is a tough one now, because I had a pick here for the Rugby World Cup semi-final between Wales and South Africa of Wales +8. Stephen Ferris has gone the other way.
I'm going to go with Stephen on this one. But look, do what you could do. I can disagree with you and put in Stephen's shout into this.
They're the same price because it's with the handicap. I was going to go Wales +8, South Africa -8. They're both evens. And there's a part of me that wants to change it because I can, because it's the same price. I'm going to go with Stephen. Actually, do you know what? I hadn't fully considered
the injuries
of Wales, and actually they're not in great form, really, you know, and there is a chance that South Africa could just squeeze them out of the game. And the more, when I was listening to him there trying to disagree, all I could see was a scoreline of like 15-20 points in the difference in the end of the game. So I'm going to go South Africa -8 on that. And then a couple of other sports. There's golf in Japan, as people will know, because they would have seen Brian O'Driscoll play with Tiger Woods and hitting a birdie in front of Tiger Woods, which, like, Brian O'Driscoll's a very, very accomplished sportsman, but I dare say that's one of the top moments of his entire life.
Yeah.
Or entire career, you know, sporting.
Don't you hate the way prowess. These sports people are just good at every sport?
Yeah. Brian loves a bit of golf. But anyway, Rory is playing in the Zozo Championship this week. I've gone for him to finish in the top 20. He's one of those people that even if he has a disastrous first round,
he could go home on Saturday and finish in the top 20.
He scrapes. I don't know
if that's
possible.
Or turn up on Friday. There's a couple of them he did only turn up on the Friday there. Some of the ones we were doing for Get Hyped, he was about 97th.
That's what he does. That's exactly what I'm saying. He'll scrape through the cut and he'll have one of those Sundays where you look at the leaderboard when you come in to just watch the leaders who are just teeing off, and Rory will be on the 16th hole and he'll be fourth.
Yeah.
Because he'll just have a 63. Two out of nowhere, and that's what he'll end up finishing 17th, you know, and that's what Rory does. So him 2-5 to finish in the top 20 is fairly standard, I would say. And then also this week, the Mexican Grand Prix, Lewis Hamilton could wrap up the Drivers' Championship this week. There, even though there's four races to go, he's undoubtedly going to win it. However, this isn't a track for Mercedes, and I've gone for a Ferrari, either Ferrari, to win the race 5-6. They're on really, really good form lately. And do you know, who I got it from that the race would suit them and not Mercedes?
Eddie Jordan?
No, the team chief of Mercedes. So he could be playing silly beggars.
This lad now could be Yarra now.
he could. He might be Yarra.
GA manager. This is going to be a tough one.
Or playing silly beggars, but it actually does make sense and it goes along with the odds. So I'm going to go for a Ferrari to win that. That all works out, Mark, as a big shout of 26.88-1, above the 25-1 limit.
No Formula One car can hide in the long grass because it gets stuck.
Yeah, and the red of the Ferrari would kind of pop out anyway. Yeah. Although we're talking about Mercedes, so that's more of a green and silver. Or something.
The silver, yeah.
Yeah, that could get lost in the grass.
Yeah, but kind of
very snake-coloured, actually.
Anyway, forget.
Well, I'll go through these again very quickly, right? Watford-Bournemouth draw. South Africa minus 8 against Wales, Dr. Crokes to win, Ballyhale Shamrocks to win, Rory McIlroy to finish in the top 20 in the Zozo Championship, and a Ferrari, either Ferrari, to win the Mexican Grand Prix.
If you want to be in with a chance of winning two cakes in sports biography, get on to ladbrokes.com right now. Take a look through the prices of all the different sporting events happening this weekend and send us an email to thegaffer@balls.ie, which are big shout. If it's 25 to 1 or greater and it comes off, then you will win yourself the coveted prize of two cakes in a sports biography. Now let's chat to Morris Brosnan. He's going to be in the studio to chat about the GAA weekend. He's getting us hyped for that. And also the new NBA season. Mr. Morris Brosnan is back in studio. Morris, what's the crack?
Not much, no, Mark. How about you?
I should divvle a bit. We had a tough weekend in the GAA last week. We had a lot of predictions. Not a lot of them came off. In fact, none of them came off.
No, one of them did. I can't remember what one, but so, Morris had definitely one that came true.
Yeah, so I had Michal Branox, who lost on penalties in the end, which is a good way to lose a county final. But at the same time, if it's gone to extra time, they've drawn twice in a replay. I don't know really what more you can do to separate the teams. Other than that, yeah, there wasn't much joy.
Like Tyrconnell Gales, you had.
They won. There wasn't much joy.
I had Derry Gonnelly, but I was too much of a chicken to fully go in behind them. In fact, I said the exact words. But I don't know enough about them now to actually tip them, but it's a good one to look at. It's well worth paying attention to, which I don't know what that means. It's like pay attention to as your tip that you mentioned goes and hammers Carrigan.
I think that's part of the problem, though, with when you're like, you look at these really one side teams, there's no way, like, but you're going off, everybody's judging off reputation. Like, say, for example, we had a conversation off air last week, Mark, about Tuam potentially beating Cara Finn. Now, they didn't beat them, they drew. Gary Sykes kicked a couple of points late in the game. But if you looked at the price, you would have said, oh, well, you know, Cara Finn are going for their seventh in a row. They haven't lost a game in over 42 games. They're Ireland defending champions. And then you look at their team and you're like, well, David Burke is injured and not fit to start. Kieran Fitzgerald isn't fit to play. Michael Lundy isn't fit to start. And suddenly you're like, well, this isn't the same team at all as the one they played last year. But I think it just illustrates that often there's huge value to be found if you kind of look through the actual state of the teams as opposed to the name, which we didn't do last week.
No, have you looked at any value?
Hold on, he's after putting the shits up me now for the big shout saying that to me. Are you happy enough with Crokes and Ballyhale this week?
Oh, I am, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, grand. Yeah. Okay, thank God. All right, I was worried, even though I only watched Ballyhale play last week, I was still worried I was going off reputation.
And also, if you're looking for value, back in these finals to be a draw as last weekend proved is definitely the best way to go. Yeah. Have you got anything this weekend that's caught your eye?
Yeah, speaking of that idea, right? Like this weekend is a tad bit underwhelming, but again, it's like I looked at what some games should be priced as and what the nice price is. So that Saturday night, you've got the Dublin Football Championship semi-finals. Mark, we definitely watched Ballyboden play.
And St. Jude's against Vincent's as well that day. Where Vincent didn't score a point until about injury time in the second half, nearly.
So based off that, like I was looking at that game and I was, what should that price be? I thought actually this would be two really heavy one-sided games. Ballyboden are 8-11. Kilmacud nearly unbackable at 1-8. But in a double, I think it's nearly even money. I think that they've actually underestimated Ballyboden. They're like Jude's. Without, you know, this could come back to bite you, but Vincent's were awful that day. They would admit themselves they're awful, and yet still probably could have won it if Tomás Quinn had finished that goal chance and Vardy had a chance in the second half. I know Jimmy Connolly started to fade out the game and he kicked a couple of wides in the second half, but it was definitely there for them if they wanted it. Ballyboden, if you're looking for something to do on Saturday night, go and watch Cullen Bascal play football. He is absolutely sensational. I think this is the kind of the Conor Callaghan Kula year before they break out on senior. I think there's a spot at wing forward with Cullen Bascal's name written on it for Dublin next year. He's just outrageous. He's such a good finisher. He covers so much ground, but he's kind of like, what's the stereotype? Rolls Royce wing forward.
Rolls Royce.
A roadrunner.
Roadrunner doesn't do him justice because he kind of just glides along, covering ground. And as well as that, being so powerful on both sides as well, he can finish. So he's and then on top of that, you've got his brother in the same team as well. So I think that should be enough for Ballyboden. Kilmacud Crokes.
Yeah, I just 6-4 for Jude's actually caught my eye. So it's hard. That's one where I probably stay away.
Actually saw that as well, and I looked at Jude's. I was like, they're consistently underrated.
See, they've never won a Dublin Championship, which is probably why.
Yeah. I know, but this team in particular, just they're very hard bet, like, aren't they? Like, I'd fancy Ballyboden as well. I just mean that I'd be scared of it, like, you know.
Yeah, the way I looked at it was, if I ranked it at the very start of the year, if you'd asked me who would you rank as potential Dublin Championship winners, it probably would have gone something along the lines of Kilmacud to defend it, Ballyboden or Nafina. And Ballyboden were much better. Well, weren't much better. They bet them next time against Nafina.
Yeah.
But based off that, I think that they probably have proved their credentials there. I actually think that the in terms of even if it's they are as one sided as I might think they are, Kilmacud is best Clontarf. We talked about that actually on last week's podcast. Paul Manion only came on at half time and ended up kicking 4 points. I think that you know, like, if you're timing a run, they look pretty well set to do something this weekend as well.
Can I jump in and take us out of the predictions for a second and talk about the Dublin players coming on for their clubs?
Weird, yeah.
In quarter final level of the championship. What's going on there? Like, that's like, I know, yeah, they need a break. They won the 5-0. It's probably a blowout thing, but like, the one thing about GA that you have is that, like, you will go back and play championship for your club if they're going to be available at all. I understand if somebody wants to take a couple of months off after that, like, I wouldn't begrudge it to them at all, but it's weird that they've been all, like, every single one of them are kind of just being, well, not every single one, but almost all of them are being kind of eased back in.
Yeah, so for those who don't know the story, Enver Comerford, the Dublin sub number two, like a lot of people argue, is one of the best goalkeepers in the country. Playing back up to Stephen Cluxton, didn't start for Ballymun in when they actually went out that day. Keane O'Sullivan didn't even come on for Kilmacud.
Yeah.
Mannion came on at half time.
Michael Darren McCauley, like, came on at the start for Ballyboden. Extra time, yeah, against against Nafina.
Yeah, it is weird. Yeah, like, I do know that a lot of them went away. There was a holiday booked anyway, so a lot of them went away. And maybe that's like, if I don't know if you're worried about after a final and then taking a big break, what exactly level of fitness is it? Maybe it is just easing them back in, but it's definitely, it's like, the explanation for the Comerford one was that we've played club football all year, we've developed systems around this goalkeeper, and that he's been there with us and Comerford wasn't, so therefore that's why we did it.
Yeah,
but I don't know if
I feel if this was happening in any other county, it'd be a much bigger story
potentially.
I think,
yeah,
it'd be a much bigger story if the collective of the county team was barely involved in the club game.
I think this weekend will be very interesting to see what Kilmacud actually end up doing. Like, it's given, there's no logical reason not to start Paul Mannion. Like, we saw what he did when he came on at half time. Like, there's no explanation as to why, mm-hmm, you wouldn't play him. So that's something else to keep an eye out for on Saturday night, I guess.
Yeah, and look, there is a wider conversation probably to have, and again, not to get into the tiers and all the discussion about the club calendar, the county versus the county calendar and fixtures. Like, there have been issues with other counties as well where county players are just actually getting injured a lot and bits and bobs like that. Like, we're in, I'll say bits and bobs, it's a serious issue of players probably that are maybe overworked and that are, you know, it's too long of a season or whatever as it is already for them. So there is that aspect to it as well that could be influencing whether these players are actually even fit to play or they're carrying niggles throughout the year or whatever. Two other games that have caught my eye in terms of pricing is Moorfield against Sarsfields.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was a draw last weekend, the Kildare County final. Moorfield are 4-5 on Ladbrokes to win the replay. Sarsfields are 11-8. Another draw is 13-2. Sarsfields at 11-8 is interesting. I don't, again, it's one where I don't know if I can make a prediction, but it's, you know, again, I'm just kind of pick out prices like we did last, like we were saying last week with Derry Gonley. Like, you could easily see one of these games, that or the Donegal final, going to a draw again.
Yeah.
The other one is Rathoath against Summerhill. A couple of lads in the Meath from Meath in the office here. Summerhill are in their third Meath senior final in a row, having lost to Simonstown and Dunboyne in the last 2 years. So this could be their third year in a row to lose to a different team again with Rathoath. Rathoath are the coming team. They've got Conor McGill on the team. They've got the two Wallaces and they've got McMahon as well. But Summerhill at 13-8. Surely this must, they're going to have to get over the line at some stage.
Yeah.
They've been to the final before. We're told they've never won a senior championship. We're told it's their first time in the Meath final. So you'd say Summerhill have every chance there, and 13-8 is a decent price.
Yeah. Just, again, not even to select any, and another replay that's just worth mentioning, we didn't talk about last week, is there's a brilliant story in the Clare Senior Football Championship, right? So Kilmuria Bracane and Milltown Malbay are next door neighbours. It's two small villages. They are also two of the powerhouses of Clare football, right? But between them, before last Sunday, they'd played in 22 county finals and never played each other. And there is a lot of interrelations between the team, a lot of intermarriage, a lot of, you know, cousins, everything like that. And they go and they finally meet and it's a draw. And it's a dramatic draw. and now they're playing again this week.
And it's like, also, you know, the game that's impossible to split. Like, I,
yeah, oh, that's what, I have no idea. I have no intention of going near.
You look at the odds on that one. It's evens for Milltown, and it's 11-10 for Kilmorey Airbricken. So, like,
just a great story, worth watching. Yeah, just about. Right, yeah.
So there's the one that you could be looking at 13-2 to be a draw again.
Yeah,
like Micheál Branach against Uthra.
Isn't it funny? Like, those kind of games, nearly all, like, they always tend to be tight, and they never tend to be that entertaining. Like, you look what I don't know if anybody watched Squeezed Oil and Niamh Connell at the weekend as well, but like the
as punishment,
and then
I don't know. I think at club level, and especially if it is local and passionate, I think the quality kind of doesn't matter, you know, in a way. It does in some ways, but there's much of it that's just, like...
You should watch Greed Orbach.
maybe not that match, but I think talking about like the Clare game, whatever, that's low scoring. It's also primal, you know, and there's a bit to that. Yeah, now look, Donegal is a story unto itself at club level. Yeah.
Any other games catch your eye?
The only other one that's interesting is like Liam Mellows. I think we talked about being priced off, like Liam Mellows are playing Capitai. I think they might be 4-6 in that game as well. You mentioned Ballyhale against James Stevens. Like, you can make a case, to my mind, for both of the underdogs in that case. Like, Mellows have kind of hung their hat on the fact that they actually don't have a huge amount of county players, you know, like that, so that it doesn't really hurt them. That, like, their best, Ty Caron is probably the most familiar people from Galway who people know from that team, but the rest of them is like, you know, they've got like Kevin Lee, John Lee's younger brother who did play for Galway. Kevin was at Galway 21, Enda Fallon, the two Hastings brothers, like these kind of players who are like really, really good club players, but maybe not, haven't kicked on at intercounty level yet. Now, like that, sometimes you look at that and you're like, that's not a good thing, but I actually think it is a good thing in reality. Like, when you have this, maybe come back to our conversation earlier, when you have that core group together for so long, like, I remember the Mellows were totally, like, I remember they came into the semi final against Lena Percy, were totally underrated in that day, and actually really put it up to them for you know, 45 minutes that day as well. So I think that again, like, if you're looking at names, you think, geez, Capitai, like, maybe they will be close, but I just wonder, like, Mellows at 4-6, I think, is generous. And you mentioned Ballyhale as well. If you looked last week, whatever, like, there's this typical stuff with Ballyhale that we always talk about, like Adrian Mullen and TJ Reid and stuff like that. But then you've got players who, Tom, I think,
three of the best forwards in the country.
But then you've got, like, I think we talked about Colin Maskell. I think a lot of people know more about him within 12 months. Owen Cody, I think, is a guy a lot of people know more about in 12 months as well.
And
it was sensational, wasn't it? Yeah. And like, I mean, he was on that, the Kilkenny team last year ended up losing the semi-final. He, like, whatever about Adrian Mullen, now he was trying to balance it and he wasn't fit. I remember there was the thigh injury that we weren't really sure what was going on. Owen Cody was a leading light on that team as well. Like, he really has that kind of like aura about him already. So yeah, in that, again, I think that they've got star power. Another guy who actually hasn't kicked on at intercounty level, but it's not that it's hurt him for Ballyhale either. So that's another, like, if you're looking at prices that might be slightly a tad generous to underdog, that's another double that I imagine that'll come out at about even money as well.
Yeah. The thing on Lee Mellows is as well, it's like they don't have the intercounty pedigree, but they have the club pedigree. So it's like when they've already done it before, like they were in an All-Ireland final, you know, it's like, so when you've already done it before, you tend to trust that they'll be able to turn it on again, like if they have that run together.
So you're looking at 4-6 for Lee Mellows, and probably a good one if you're having a double, like you're saying.
Exactly,
And 2-7 for Ballyhale then, yeah.
Yeah. So looking, if you're having any bets on the GAA over the weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly. It's just a bit of crack. And as we all know from last week, we clearly know nothing about predicting these games, so don't take our word for it. You can of course visit dunlewy.net for more information. Mara is going to stay with us next. We're going to get hyped about the new NBA season. So when you see Trey, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like we're getting hyped tonight, because if a strike, it ain't for you. The NBA season is back up and running. Morris, I'm a kind of a Toronto Raptors fan, in that my girlfriend lived in Toronto, she's big into the Raptors, so it's kind of, I've always been searching for a team to support in the NBA. Donnie decided I was a Buffalo Bills supporter for the NFL this season. My Raptors thing, I think I just kind of was like, right, well, if she supports Raptors, I'll support Raptors too.
By the way, Buffalo used to play one game a year in Toronto.
There you go.
That's gone by the wayside now, but they did for many years. Yeah.
With Kawhi leaving, the rumours of Toronto's demise have been greatly exaggerated, because they've lost Kawhi, but they started off the season with a win in overtime, albeit. Siakam and Van Vliet getting 34 points each. Have they got a hope, or am I just building my hopes up for no reason?
They're 6-1 to win their division, which is a six team. They're the fourth favourite in a five team division. They're 22-1 to win the to win the NBA to retain their title, which I think is actually generous. I think the only thing they have going for them is that the East is pretty weak.
Yeah, it is. This is, it's actually, like, I don't know about you, this is the most excited I've been about an NBA season, yeah, I think, ever. Like, and like, the reason that you talked about the East being weak, I think it, like, basically means that anybody is in with a playoff chance there. Like, in the West, you've got the LA, it's all about LA this year. Like, you've got the Clippers and the Lakers, and that's just gonna, that's gonna be the narrative for the year, both in terms of, because the media, a lot of it is based there anyway, and also just because of the personalities that you have there. And then in the East, you've got like the Bucks and the 76ers. I actually think so much of this year is going to be, so much of the discourse is going to be about who can stay healthy, which will lead us on to Rookie of the Year in a second. But like, if you're looking at like you know, the Greek Freak, like Giannis, like, it's about, can he get better? If he can, what does that look like? What does that mean for them? Same thing, like, I think that the Clippers were looking like they'd constructed and as close to an all-star team as possible. Yeah. And then suddenly there's this stuff about Paul George and his shoulder, and like, that basically means that, like, come December, we're either going to be talking about Kawhi's MVP run or what the hell is wrong with the Clippers and why can't they get a run together. I actually think the same thing might apply to LeBron as well, by the way. Like the
losing already, like, obviously, like, first game.
Yeah, and like the you know, effectively, like, this is kind of the Stephen A commentary, but like, effectively, he took a year out last year. You know what I mean? Like, he took a year, and so he's to get back up again this year. I don't know how, like, Anthony Davis is a, LeBron is, what he can do so well is that he can basically make a pass to anybody, and now he's got the ideal man to make a pass to in Anthony Davis.
Yeah, I think what's an underrated storyline in LeBron, though, is like, LeBron James is my age, and he's been playing in the NBA since he left high school, which, if he's my age, meant that was 2002, 2003. You know, that's a long time. And he's, and he's made the playoffs or the finals in nearly every single year. That guy has been playing 10-month seasons, 9-month seasons for his whole career. And last year, for the first time, he looked injured. And he may have taken it off, or, you know, taken nights off, but he was also injured for the whole year. He might not be LeBron James anymore.
Which is, yeah.
And he, like, just might not ever be LeBron James anymore. Now, but Anthony Davis is a pretty good player.
The NBA season,
you know,
the NBA season baffles me continuously. I just can't understand how they keep doing this. Like, even now, when we're talking about building up to the weekend, like, we're talking about the Lakers and Clippers playing last night, and then they're going to play on Saturday morning or late Friday night again. I think the Lakers are playing, Clippers out against the Celtics again this weekend. They, like, having games 2 days in a row. I just don't know how they keep, how their bodies hold together. I know I sound like Marion Finucane or someone, you know, I've heard of this basketball, what's going on? They're playing all the time, but it just never ceases to amaze me.
It is unbelievable, because, like, they play 48 minutes, and in, if you look at it, like, Irish basketball level, it's like, it's not professional level, it's not like NBA level, but they play, like, they can play a back-to-back game, like, maybe like a couple of years, but in general they play one game a week, you know. And it's like, and you'd be pretty shattered after it. I don't know how they go out and play the games afterwards. Like, it's 48 minutes. Someone like a super, like, someone like Kawhi, well, maybe not Kawhi because he's kind of been protected, but like an Anthony Davis type or someone will play 42 minutes, you know, 40 to 42 of those 48 minutes, you know, and then go out and play the night after. It's kind of mad. Like,
and you, like, you also got to take into consideration that you talk about, like, game logs, LeBron's miles on the clock are a lot higher than, like, do you remember watching the Cavs when LeBron would play like 45 out of 48 minutes? Like, he'd take a, to come off just before the end of the third quarter, take the break as they were going into the fourth quarter, and come back on then. Like, it was just so much more reliant on him that the miles on the clock are a lot higher.
What are you looking at for the season? We're doing some, what do they call them in America? Futures bets.
Yeah, futures.
So who's going to win the NBA title this year? It's absolutely wide open, as you mentioned. You mentioned Rookie of the Year earlier on as well. What else have you got?
Yeah, Rookie of the Year is an interesting one, right? Like, if you'd asked me on the show last week who would win Rookie of the Year this year, I think, like, it was basically a question of, if you're going to look at Rookie of the Year, you're betting on Zion not getting injured. Like, this guy came out of college putting up ridiculous numbers, and suddenly then came, got, like, people might remember there was this controversial enough story last year about his sneakers, the Nike shoes that he was wearing that broke on the court, that potentially contributed to an ankle injury. We don't know now. I mean, but he suffered an ankle injury with a kind of a weird shoe incident. Then this year, there was all kinds of rumors. Like, I remember the Ringer actually talked about the fact that, like, why haven't we seen this guy enough in preseason? Turns out that he had a torn meniscus. So he actually is injured for 6 to 8 weeks. Now, there's a very, very good chance that if all things go according to plan, Zion comes back, puts up ridiculous numbers and storms to like a rookie of the year anyway. Like I remember the comparison that a lot of people were talking about. I think Kyrie won it in the 2011 or 2012 with the Cavs, and it was kind of the similar thing. Like this guy just exploded onto the scene, and that's where like that's all the earmarks for Zion are. But like given those two injury concerns, I think that if you were to bet, like if you were to hedge your bet and think, is there a possibility this guy gets injured again? So he's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks at least now. And then you're like, he needs to be healthy for the rest of the year, really, if he's going to be in it. I think that suddenly that there's more maybe value in bets outside of him. You know what I mean? Like, I think like a guy like Kobe White, who is playing with the Bulls this year. Now, like, I don't know how good the Bulls are going to be, but this, if you look at his shooting in preseason, he's putting up like Derrick Rose numbers. Like the guy is like tearing through that. I think he's like, he's a massive price, might be 14 to 1 or something like that. So the reason that they're all still hugely priced is because there's full expectation, which very could well happen, that Zion will come back, take to this like a fish to water and storm through the year. But I actually do think that there is value outside of like the outside of that market now, just because you're kind of looking at a guy like, is he healthy? That's the question. That it's not if he's good enough, because he is good enough.
I thought you were going to say the player called, is he healthy? Is he healthy? Fuzzy, is it?
The guy I like actually is the second runner up there in rookie of the year, Ja Morant. I think that he could, he's with the Grizzlies this year. That could be potentially interesting. As for a team to win it, I actually don't know, but I do think that the 76ers got the best defense in the East. And sorry.
No, go on.
I think 76ers got the best defense in the East. I think like Joel Embiid last year is like, he's a guy, he's a really enjoyable guy to watch defensively. And he might like, I think there's, we live in analytics era, particularly in America, and I think there's no question marks over his shooting, but defensively he's class. And he also has a guy like, who Mick would be very familiar with, Ben Simmons, who's there now as well. And I think that is like, you're talking about like LeBron probably needed one more guy. He's got Anthony Davis now. Kawhi definitely needed one more guy. He's got Paul George when he comes back fit. Joel probably has his guy in a sense now with Ben. Maybe not enough to trouble teams enough at the other end of the court, but defensively they're definitely the best, and like that'll go for a lot.
Yeah, the Sixers are the Sixers, though. They're the same team that we saw last year, whereas everybody else, we don't know what they're going to be. The thing about the Sixers is they're kind of forgotten about coming into the season, but they were like a miracle shot away from beating the Raptors, you know, in the East last year. That was one of the most amazing shots I've ever seen. Yeah. You know, the Kawhi shot there that kind of won that game. It was pure basketball at its best, you know. But the Sixers are definitely, I like the Bucks though, and I think that I'm agreeing with Morris that I think the Bucks are 5-1 to win it, the Sixers are 15-2. I like someone from the East, and the reason is, right, you got in the Clippers, I've got Paul George eventually, but mainly Kawhi, right? And they've built up, they were a pretty nice team last year anyway, that they're building on top of, that I wouldn't kind of sleep on either. They're not just their superstars. You've got the Lakers with LeBron and Davis. You've also got the Houston Rockets, who aren't gone away either, and they've got James Harden there, like, shooting the lights out. And, like, you've got Denver and Utah are pretty good, but Golden State are going to have a say in it. Like, so they've lost, like, obviously, they're the dynasty team that have come to an end. They've still, like, you know, Steph Curry is still going to be there shooting the lights out every night. Klay Thompson's going to be injured. He's going to be out for the season. And, obviously,
yeah, I don't think
Durant
we'll see him,
is
yeah.
gone.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're going to win the title, but they're going to take scalps, and they're going to be really hard to get by because they're like the old dog, you know, in the playoffs. So suddenly you come out of the West, you're just going to have to fight and scrap for everything. Whereas the Sixers or the
Raptors,
or not even the Raptors, but the Sixers or the Bucks with like, it depends on what Giannis, if Giannis can improve, like Morris says, I think the Bucks could win the whole thing really this year. But you know, the Celtics, to a lesser extent, the Celtics and the Raptors will still be kind of involved. You don't know what the Celtics are going to be. They've got rid of Kyrie now, and they've got in Kemba Walker, who's not as good a player, but the whole everything yeah. everything else will work better. You yeah. know, they're going to be talking about flat earth a lot less. And I think that's going to really help the Celtics. I think they could surprise people this year. But anyway, I just like, you can, here's the thing, we don't know anything that's going to happen. There's no point in looking at these. I like the Bucks at 5-1. I think Morris is it's a better price to look at 15-2 about Philadelphia. But I don't like either of the LA teams to actually go and win the title, right? That's all I'll say about prediction wise but I think you can hear from our, the way we're talking about this, how excited we are and how hyped we are about it. And like, I'm just gonna, it is bloody hard to watch NBA in this part of the world. There's night games, they're on every day of the week, and it is not an easy sport to kind of follow properly, you know, and the playoffs are on the middle of the night and all. But if you can at all, the games are on Sky, it is well worth trying to get a few games in this year, because it's going to be, it could be one of the best NBA seasons ever.
And particularly what Mixer said there about the idea, like how open it is, that means that a lot of the games you're watching are like, you know, potential playoff games, like you will see matchups eventually there. Just on the final thing on what Mick was saying there, that like, given that the MVP race, I think Giannis is probably favorite for, I would imagine, for MVP for this year as well. If he isn't, though, there's probably like, there's question marks over Steph. Doesn't have Clay, we don't know if he's gonna play this year. I highly doubt it. I think Mick's right, he also doesn't have Durant this year. LeBron, this is the same thing, is he gonna bounce back as well? I think that James Harden, if he continues, he's the most likely to continue his form line from last year. If he does, I think he's a great bet for.
And also, they, I forgot to even mention that they've got Westbrook, who's the MVP from 2 years ago, gone to the Rockets now. And that's like, you know, we're talking about two LA teams, that's become a kind of a superstar heavy team as well. So anyway, I forgot all about Westbrook. I can't.
Said there's going to be a quiz at the end of this podcast. Everybody's listening, you have to recite all the names the lads have mentioned in the last 15 minutes.
Okay. James Harden is 11-2 for MVP. I think that's there's value in that.
Nice, nice. We'll take down all these. We'll come. We'll revisit them next. Is it June? I'm trying to remember when the
a lifetime away.
Morris, thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks, lads.
Mick, we're going to we're going to stay in America next. You're going to give us our NFL picks before we go. Mick, is that part of the show again? The part of the show where you get to gloat, where you get to brag, and you get to be what was that? Master of your domain. The phrase, I think, that said it was in Friends, that line, I am master of my domain. No, maybe Always Sunny in Philadelphia. One of those. It's an American TV show anyway, and it's quite fitting because we're about to talk about American football, and you're going to give us your three NFL picks for the weekend. Last week, remind us what happened. I know you went 2-1, but who were the teams you had backed?
I had the New Orleans Saints, who I talked to you about being kind of consistently underrated by the handicap, I'd say, all year, ever since Teddy Bridgewater came in. They've gone to 5-1 now, or is it 6-1 or 5-1? They easily beat the Chicago Bears in Chicago, and they had plus 3.5. That was kind of secure from an early point in the game. I'd already gone 1-0 earlier in the day because the Packers had beaten the Raiders at home. Aaron Rodgers had his best game of the year. He looked absolutely, like, he looked like old school Aaron Rodgers. It was unbelievable. Raiders actually played well. I kind of predicted that game rightly. I kind of said, like, you know, that they're not a joke the way they were earlier in the year, but I think they've been given too much credit here on the road with the spread, and they ended up losing in kind of a very high scoring game by way more than the 5.5 that the Packers had. And then unfortunately, Seattle Seahawks -3.5 lost to the Baltimore Ravens. Lamar Jackson, by the way, if anybody is a kind of a semi NFL watcher and thinks they might get interested in it sometime, you know, you could do worse than watching the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson at quarterback, because, you know, he was unplayable at the weekend. He was actually incredible. Anytime he wanted to run for a first down, faster than all the defenders, more elusive than all the defenders, and he can throw the ball perfectly as well. It's like, there's not much this guy can't do. He's kind of a superstar, to be honest. He could be in the running for MVP honors. Anyway, so that was 2-1. I let down by the Seahawks. That was Russell Wilson didn't have his best game by his standards this year. I'm 10-5 for the season. Pretty happy with that against the spread. It's a very good record. I am worried about this week.
This weekend looks to be a really, really difficult weekend against the spread, because there could be a lot of blowouts with the games that we have coming up.
You feel like there could be some blowouts, all right, yeah. And there's a lot of games that I'm looking at. I'll give you an example of a couple of games that I just crossed out straight away that I just didn't want to have anything to do with, right? Because there's a lot of unpredictable teams in games against each other. The Giants and the Lions. The Lions have been very good every time I've watched them this year, but they never seem to win. You know, the Giants are the Giants.
We need to talk about the Giants just for a second.
Okay, come on.
Not about the actual team, but my God almighty, I was never so close to putting my head through the television on Sunday night watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. This lad, I think his name was Chris Lim, was on.
Okay, I love this now. I have no idea where you're going.
He used up all his lifelines to get to $4,000, right? The next question, then, he had no lifelines left. Jeremy Clarkson, by the way, is the worst person. It's hilarious for us watching it, but the worst person if you're in a hot seat to be doing something with that, because he just kept abusing him then for the rest of the quiz. It's like, you've got to 4,000, despite the fact you know nothing about anything. £8,000 question. Which of these actors famously said the line, "Go ahead, make my day" in Sudden Impact? right? All the options come up. He guesses Clint Eastwood. He spends ages looking at it. At this stage, I have quoted the entire scene at home. I'm there going, do I feel lucky? But well, do you, punk? I got to know and all this. I'm gone full Clint Eastwood.
God help your long-suffering girlfriend.
He guesses Clint Eastwood, gets it right, and then proceeds to tell Jeremy Clarkson how he actually had thought before the answers come up that it was Arnold Schwarzenegger, and lucky enough, he hadn't give up as one of the multiple choices. Then he gets it. So that's the £8,000 question. Then you can set your bar now wherever you want it, who wants to be millionaires, and you take the money. So it used to be £32,000. He decided to set it to 16. Question comes up, which of these famous monuments is in the Southern Hemisphere? And it was Christ the Redeemer. And he starts wondering about whether it's Christ the Redeemer or the other ones. And everybody's like, it's bloody Christ the Redeemer, just answer it. Guesses that, somehow gets that one right as well. Guaranteed £16,000. Next question comes up. Which of these teams is a Major League Baseball team? Is it the New York Knicks, the New York Mets, the New York Giants, or the New York, I can't remember what the other one was.
Islanders or something.
New York, it was the New York Rangers.
Rangers, yeah.
He goes, thinks about it for ages, hasn't got a clue again. And decides to guess the New York Giants. So obviously I'm apoplectic here at the television. And then they decide to go to an ad break. So I had to wait another 3 minutes for him to get it wrong. So that's why I was like, it's not the bloody New York Giants, it's the Mets. So that's my Who Wants to Be a Millionaire story. Hal from Wales, come on, after that, was absolutely brilliant. Knew the £500,000 question, but didn't know enough to risk it. Unfortunately, he would have gotten it right, but he took £250,000, made everything okay. All right.
Well, look, if you want more on this, you can listen to our build-up to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire podcast, which comes out on Thursday. Yeah, well, we'll come back out for the next series. This, unfortunately, is the build-up sports podcast, and I will tell you about the NFL picks and why I can't do it. Giants, Jets and Jags, another one I just can't call because they're all mad. Here's the most, like, this is an example of why this week is tough. Anyone who knows anything about this, right? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are at the Tennessee Titans. They are the two craziest teams. Like, they could be great 1 week. They could be. Or they could go, the last time before the Bucs played was in London 2 weeks ago before their bye week, and Jameis Winston threw 5 interceptions. And they were still in the game somehow with a few minutes to go. They're just absolutely...
Don't talk about it. It's me with Winston as my quarterback.
in your fantasy league. Okay, so what I have gone with then, there's a couple of big ones that you said, big blowouts that I've decided against. Once again, I'm afraid of the New England Patriots, despite the fact that they beat the spread every week. They're minus 12.5 against the Browns, who haven't been great so far this year. So I've gone with a couple... of home favorites. The Indianapolis Colts are -6 against the Denver Broncos. Denver Broncos traded their best receiver, Emmanuel Sanders, to the 49ers there this week. That suggests to me that they know the season's up. They're going to be trying. They're going to try and win every game, but ultimately they've given up on the season. That filters down to players. That's very hard to get yourself motivated. The Colts, very, very good team. The problem with the Colts is putting it back-to-back, and they did beat the Texans this week, but I still think they'll do that at home. And I think -6 is easy enough one for them to get. The Rams, LA Rams, not the most trustworthy team this season. However, I think they bounced back from their slump. They easily beat the Falcons last week away. The Falcons are pretty bad, but so are the Bengals. They're home to the Bengals. It's actually the best run they could possibly get. And I think even going through the motions, they'll win this game like 35-7. You know, so -13, I'm pretty confident with, right? So Colts -6, Rams -13. The more controversial one that I'm going for is the undefeated San Francisco 49ers are home to the still Cam Newton-less Carolina Panthers. I talked about the Panthers here early in the year as possibly being a Super Bowl contender when we got hyped for the NFL season. I picked them at 25-1. They started off awfully. They were making fools out of me, but they've come into it now. They're playing very, very well lately. I think they're a good team. I think possibly even talent-wise, they might be even better than the Niners, despite the fact that they're undefeated. Jimmy Garoppolo playing really well, a quarterback there. It is on the road, which isn't ideal, but they've got 5 points to play with. I think this game could come down to a field goal either way. So I'm going with the Carolina Panthers +5 at the 49ers.
49ers, Are they Super Bowl contenders, real Super Bowl contenders now with Sanders going to them as well?
Yeah, Sanders is a really big, like, they didn't have that big name receiver. They've got a really good tight end, George Kittle, but they didn't have like the top line receiver. And Sanders is coming off an Achilles and probably looks like he's back to his best, even though he's in his early 30s. It's a short term thing, you know, but it's that's a huge one for them, actually. Like, yeah, they're an interesting team. I think people like when the 49ers are relevant.
Definitely.
Which hasn't been the case always, because they just have all that history going for them. And they're always on in the half nine game because of where they are, and there's less games on at that time, and you can enjoy them a little bit more.
Mick, I don't know how we're going to get through all the sport coming up this weekend. There's so much. Yeah. Like, I mean, if we just decide to ignore all the sport outside of America, it's a packed weekend, never mind anything else.
And also, I have an NFL public service announcement that comes this time every year. The clocks go back on Saturday night. There's lots of reasons you need to know that. You need to make sure you're getting up early enough for the rugby on Sunday morning if you're going to watch Wales and South Africa. But in general, you'll be adjusted because every other sport that you watch also have the clocks go back. Not in America. So the games start at 5 o'clock this weekend, and I think maybe next weekend as well, but definitely this weekend, 5 o'clock and 8:30. It means you get to watch more of them, but you know, you got to be in there early. Maybe you got your second screen if you're watching Liverpool and Spurs.
Really importantly, it means you have to have your fantasy football team done for 5 p.m.
Yes, exactly, yeah. 4:59.
I got to change mine. Managed to get mine in at 5:56. I started changing it last weekend, and it turned out that apart from Alvin Kamara and AJ Green, who are out, my bench was full of players on buys. Now, after I changed my team, if I hadn't done it, it was a disaster. So that's a brilliant announcement, and thank you for reminding me of that.
You're more than welcome.
Hope you all of you enjoyed the sporting weekend. If this is your first time listening, be sure to subscribe to the Build Up podcast. You can do so by searching the Build Up on Balls.ie and all good podcast apps. Or if you're listening on the podcast app right now, just click subscribe at the top of the feed. If you already subscribe, or if you're just a new subscriber as well, please do make sure to rate the show. If you could give us a 5-star rating and leave a review, it would mean an awful lot to us. Let us know how great we are at predicting stuff, because we need a bit of a confidence boost, Mick.
if you're leaving a review, and we do want it to be 5 stars, please don't have the predicting stuff as the criteria, because you can't do it in good conscience, lads.
It's a 1-star.
You know, just say it if you enjoy it or not.
But until next week, mind yourself.